Hello, and welcome to Technically Baltimore's The Look Ahead. I'm Dante Kirby, reporter with Technically, and in this series, we're exploring the theme of the new normal and discussing the lessons we've learned in 2020. And today, my guest is Andrew Coy, the executive director of the Digital Harbor Foundation. Thank you for joining us, Andrew. And I guess just to start, for those that don't know about Digital Harbor and what it does, can you sort of paint a picture of the work you do as executive director and what Digital Harbor Foundation sort of offers to the city of Baltimore?
Yeah, no, wonderful. And it's great to be on Dante with you and talking about this and thinking about what role, you know, does the Digital Harbor Foundation play in the larger ecosystem? You know, we've certainly been around for quite a while now, I guess, almost a decade of work here in Baltimore City, and most people know in Baltimore City would know us for the work that we've done out of the Digital Harbor Foundation Tech Center and the youth programs and the work that's happening there. We certainly have grown a substantial amount in the past 2 years in particular, but over the course of the years, we've added and grown. And the way that I would describe Digital Harbor Foundation to somebody right in this moment is to say that we are a portfolio of projects that are addressing kind of three main critical areas or needs that we see that we feel we have a unique perspective and team around. One of those relates to digital divide. You know, and the issues of digital divide are far reaching and relate not only to some of the technical infrastructure that's needed, but also the technical know-how and the confidence and those aspects. Another area that we work on is youth employment, youth workforce readiness, is how do we help young people have the skills and the insights and the pathways that they want into careers, you know, in particular in the tech industry. And then the third area is about diversity in the tech industry and ecosystem here. And how do we help more, folks from Baltimore City find their way into those companies that are right here, headquartered in Baltimore, or have major offices here and are looking for talent. But how do we help, you know, play a connective tissue role in that? And also nationally, some of our fiscally sponsored work, we're really excited about the work that they're doing across the country as it relates to that last point as well. But to summarize, I would say we are a portfolio of projects that are closely aligned to those issues, and we are excited for the ways in which we've grown as a team and in the work over the past 2 years in particular.
And I guess to sort of expand on, I guess I want to start with because this whole thing is about the digital divide, but talk more about as the school year has started, sort of like that STEM education portion and like getting like more youth involved with tech, which sort of translates into that tech to talent pipeline. And I guess like, can you talk a bit about like why it's important to get sort of youth involved in these STEM programs, even as young as y'all do it as like the third grade, which I feel like when we talk about tech and STEM and sort of that like talent pipeline, we sort of tend to start at around college, maybe even high school, but y'all go as young as like middle school.
Yeah. And so speaking a little bit to the younger side, and then I'll certainly sort of paint a picture of how the portfolio projects that we do impact all along that pathway, you know, and serve folks wherever they are in their own journey. But from a very young age, there's a whole set of experiences folks are having that are identity forming. You know, when young folks, and a lot of the research shows, particularly middle school, is when young people are developing a sense of self, developing a sense of likes and dislikes, of things that they feel that they're good at, of things that they are encouraged and rewarded for doing. You know, having a place to explore individual interests, community, connectedness, in those elementary into middle school years, we think is a critical part of the overall pathway, you know, and it's what, you know, so many folks across the city, you know, and we think you're reporting on the 33 plus organizations that are working in STEM and youth is spot on. And there's just so many folks, whether it's B360 or whether it's Code of Schools or, you know, a whole host of folks, Let's Go Boys and Girls, that we are proud to be working alongside, because the problem set here is larger than any one entity or organization can individually tackle, right? And we should all link arms in and be working collaboratively in that way. But as you think about that identity formation and what, you know, what does it look like to go from the classroom to a career, there's all sorts of steps along the way, including opportunities for employment. And this is where one of the fiscally sponsored projects that, that is housed here called Youth Jobs Connect is really focused in on how do we support youth employment and our own work out of the tech center with things like the print shop in the past or our Youth Works program, where we had over 100 youth employed at Digital Harbor Foundation this past summer and virtual experiences is really sort of critical and crucial. But it extends beyond some of those opportunities to how do we help those that have made it into college and are almost done but are facing challenges. And so we're incredibly proud of the work of the Last Mile Education Fund, founded by Ruth Farmer and led by a team there. And I know you've talked with folks like April, Christina Curley, and others. The work that they are doing is just so incredible because it's helping folks that have made it through all of these experiences, including types of programs that we have here and are in sight of a career in tech, but there's some barrier, some issue, some problem that was unexpected perhaps, or is just systemic. And, you know, a little sort of extra help along the ways in a more flexible manner than is often the case for most scholarships can just make such a huge difference. And so the Last Mile team is, you know, over the past 2 years awarded over $700,000 of scholarship funds that we've, you know, and we're the fiscal sponsor. We've been administering, you know, this whole process, but a lot of that has gone to universities here, students to universities in Maryland. You know, so Morgan State and others have received, you know, substantial amounts of that. And it's been a real sort of, thing that I'm proud of and excited for and seeing the opportunities that are available there. So, you know, as you look at this portfolio, it really does require kind of from that young to the college age all the way. I mean, it's also how do we support educators? And so if you think about the Center of Excellence and the work that we do through that division to support educators in their own pathways, you know, it really does take a whole village and a whole team of folks. And, you know, and so that's how we're thinking about it. How do we support the founders and creators and leaders of different efforts to do this work? And some of the Digital Harbor Foundation, you know, myself and others taking a little bit of a more of a backseat and sort of sitting a little bit further in the background and saying, hey, how do we support others and lift them up and their ideas and their passion and connectedness to the work is a question that we've been asking ourselves.
And you mentioned a bit before about like the growth over the past 2 years that you've been proud of, but like this last year was pretty hectic to say the least. And like as an org at like, I mean, I know we're all digital and digital focused and tech centered, but that doesn't necessarily mean like we primarily work through a digital space. So like, how was that adjustment to going from in-person youth programs to like being fully virtual and then essentially having to pivot your whole model of like how you service the youth in the height of a pandemic when like schools are closed and like there's so much up in the air, I guess, sort of how did y'all navigate that?
No, it's a great question. So going back into March of 2020, I remember, you know, before the school shut down and before things, we started having internal team meetings where we were saying, you know, this is the data here is not looking good, right? I follow it and had followed a lot of what folks like Dave Troy and others had been speaking about, some of the what was coming or what they were seeing was going to be coming. And one of the things that we said early on in that is the longer the social distancing measures are needed, the more that the digital divide becomes the permanent component of like what life is different. And you know, that is like what we felt like we were particularly well positioned to support. We knew that the pandemic itself and the health implications, and in the immediate short term at the outset, the food insecurity concerns were paramount and were first and foremost. But we said, you know, that's not our sort of area of domain expertise. And we, you know, felt inspired by the work of so many healthcare workers in that space, or the folks like for example, Tisha Edwards and the team that just got so much food out to so many people as schools were no longer options for so many young people. And just incredibly proud of being a part of the city and the work and seeing what's going on with other people doing that. But as it related to Digital Harbor Foundation, we said there's really three things that we feel like we are, you know, particularly positioned to help and support, you know, and we were going to transition our programs to virtual as much as we could. But we said digital access, getting access to the internet is essential and needed. And too many folks aren't going to have that available. The reports have been coming out. Well, there was a Deutsche Foundation that had done years of previous reports, or the Able Foundation more recently that had done a major sort of summary and report. We knew that 96,000 households in Baltimore didn't have internet, high speed, you know, internet in home. So we said internet is a major issue. And due to the work of Adam Boumaud and a growing team, we felt like we had a potential role to support that work. You know, and so we said, okay, internet connectivity, critical. The second area was about device access. And we said, okay, like, you know, we, through the Franz Marek Foundation, we had created a tech lending library that was focused on educators in classrooms. And we said, can we pivot that and support a growing list of folks with the Baltimore Digital Equity Coalition and all the work that was happening there. And there's folks like, whether it's PCs for People or Fearless Tech, that were heavily involved in some of that work. But, you know, pivoting to say in access to devices matters. And so we became a distribution hub. We were also a donation center, received donations of laptops and computers, got those processed, cleaned, and then distributed out to folks in need. We advocated alongside some of the Somos youth and the work there to get, you know, $3 million to city schools to support that process of them getting more devices out. So we really, really leaned in and said, we want to be a part of a larger coalition to work. And then the third area that we said we felt uniquely positioned to help was relating to youth employment. You know, we had already done, you know, some youth employment work with Mayor's Office of Employment Development, but over the course of April in 2020, we worked hand in hand with Jason Perkins Cohen and his team there to say, we think if needed, the work of YouthWorks could go virtual for a meaningful number of young people in the summer of 2020. And so we put together a tiger team and a plan and worked alongside folks like Tia Price, Whiting Youth Media, Nair Vanderpool, and others that came together. And the mayor was able to announce that at least 4,500 jobs, 4,500 jobs would be preserved for the youth employment program. And a lot of those were able to be done in person, but we had created enough of a secondary option for a virtual program, and we're able to run that for a number of youth. And so, you know, repeating that this summer and having over 100 youth employees at Digital Harbor Foundation is something that, you know, we imagine will continue, and know that Mayor Scott wants to continue to support and really values the youth employment opportunities. But we also know that youth have an increasing role to play as it relates to the digital divide and bridging that, you know, and whether folks like Kimberly Vasquez from Somos and her conversation with the Vice President Kamala Harris and some of the advocacy work that she's done around a DigiCore and youth being connected tissue as digital navigators, you know, we're all in on supporting and seeing how things like YouthWorks and the digital divide, you know, can YouthWorks can be a tool and support in helping bridge the digital divide with the youth right here in Baltimore that are passionate, talented, and that, you know, we just have a lot of optimism and hope because what we see that they are doing.
So from, I guess, what you've seen in the work you've been doing through the pandemic and like all the organizations that you've partnered with and just like sort of seeing it from multiple angles, being like top up as executive director and then also being more hands-on when you're like working in a program, I guess, what do the youth need to be successful in tech and STEM careers as we sort of move forward and sort of become like more digital oriented? And like, as you're seeing like some of the barriers that you keep continuing to see pop up as you're trying to do this work from multiple lenses.
Yeah. So one thing that I would say is youth need us in one part to just get out of the way, right? That you know, so often so much of a young person's day and time is focused on sort of like obligations and requirements that are decontextualized. That you know, and maybe the analogy that I've often given for this is you know, to know, and as a former educator, you know, I know this is not intentional in any way, or this is sort of a byproduct of the larger system. But so often it feels to me like school is the equivalent of young people eating bread by eating a cup of flour, having a drink of water and a teaspoon of salt and of yeast, which are like all the ingredients of bread, but it's a really disgusting way to eat it. And so often we hear young people say, when am I ever going to use this? You know, they're asking that question sincerely, but it's out of frustration. And, you know, it's the equivalent of giving somebody a cup of flour and them saying, like, what am I supposed to do with this? Out of context, so much of the really valuable and important content of what young people need to learn just doesn't make much sense. And so my question is, how do we contextualize learning? How do we, you know, apply it to real world problems that we have right here around us? And that if you have the combination of a just-in-time access and learning with a real world problem that you are trying to solve, it's absolutely inspiring to see what young people will do and the ways that they'll put together and solve for problems that really matter. One of the things that we did that was sponsored by the folks at SmartLogic over the pandemic was a COVID slam. And our slam model is a little bit of a hackathon, but a little bit over an extended period of time where young people get support and training and then are solving a real world problem. And the youth came up with a number of problems that they really felt needed to be addressed over the course of the pandemic, many of them focusing in on mental health and thinking about how do we support young people and their mental health during this time. Because I remember asking some of the youth when they were presenting, after they had presented and we were sort of the panel was talking to them and asking some questions, I asked the youth how many of them had made a new friend in this school year. This was last school year, you know, and none of them said that they had made a new friend. And so much of that was because of the way online schooling doesn't give any time or space for kind of the hallway conversations, right? If you're always in class, it's really hard to have a side conversation and make a friend. And so you may have friends that you had from before, you know, but making a new friend is incredibly difficult, and that has a real emotional toll on a young person, and a feeling of isolation, a feeling of disconnectedness. And so what the young people did in that project was create a Discord server that they worked on and created all the sort of parameters and how to structure it. And they continued that work over the course of the summer and supported our YouthWorks program to test it on a larger scale. And just, you know, the work that they are doing and how they are problem solving was just so inspiring to see, and them tackle some really difficult issues about things like moderation and what do you do to mitigate any potential downsides, you know, of some of the online forum space. But they solved them, and they did a really impressive job. And I just would love to see that continue to grow. And so I think part of what I'm saying is we need to invite and like remove ourselves from some of the seats at the table, but to invite youth at the table to say, how would you solve this? And, you know, to hold them to the high standard of using the tools and the resources to solve the problems rigorously, but to not sort of like chunk them out in such small disaggregated ways, such that it's the equivalent of eating flour, you know? And so that's one thing that I would say just generally is youth voice matters, you know, and again, I've referenced the Somos youth, but I think they're a clear example of what youth voice can and should be doing. And then the youth of the Upside Project and also many of the YouthWorks youth, I think are just inspirational.
And I guess to sort of get more into your personal 2020, I guess, what has 2020 this begin? Well, I guess we're not at the beginning half anymore. We're in the like last third of it now, the last third of 2021 taught you personally.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's some pretty heavy lessons. You know, one, life is short. You know, there's folks that, you know, I just know that aren't here, right? And whether it's specifically due to COVID or other things over the past year and a half, it's life is short, you know. Live with purpose and with meaning. You know, let's link arms and work together, that the problems are bigger than any one of us can solve individually. Let's talk through, you know, we've had multiple pandemics, frankly, right, over this past year and a half in particular, but 2 years, pandemics of racism, pandemics of of poverty, and also health pandemics. And so, like, let's work to tackle those, and let's like not shy away from the tough conversations, but yeah, that's, I mean, it's heavy lessons, but it's lessons that, you know, are what unite us as a human race.
And I guess from those lessons, and like from what the work that you've been doing in 2020, and sort of like basically, because in 2020, there was a lot of organizations. I feel like there's been a lot of accelerated coalition building, and that, I don't know, this probably not the first time, but it feels like there's a concerted effort and a concerted focus from both the government, like the nonprofit sector, the, you know, private companies, like they seem to be at least saying it, that they're in it to try to solve the issues of whether it be digital equity, getting more diversity in their companies, or just like the various social issues that we like to think that we are beyond in the 21st century, but we're very obviously not. So I guess, what steps do you feel that the city of Baltimore should take to sort of like, from the government and like local nonprofits and even these tech companies, because you've sort of like in the realm of all three to a certain extent, maybe not so much government, unless, I mean, you have like a mayor, but a campaign in the near future. But I digress. No, like, what do you feel like they should take?
Sorry. I was just saying, on the government side, you know, I think my service in the federal apparatus, and as a senior advisor on the tech innovation team at the White House, I think is the perspective that I think about from the government side, but not. I'm not interested in looking to run for public office, myself in any form or fashion. I think your question though is really valuable. Is like, what is it we should be doing? And I want to borrow words from two different individuals. One is Gary Bonner from PCs for People. You know, in the call we had not too long ago, you know, he said we should not be servicing the problem, we should be solving the problem. And I think that's really important, really wise. And then Tia Price from Baltimore Digital Equity Coalition. You know, I think her words, she said this was maybe over a year ago at this point, but she said, I'm impatient for change, that I'm not patiently working on these things, I'm impatiently working on these things. And in summary, I guess on this point, I would say it's on us. You know, there's never been in Maryland as much political willpower, funding, resources, right? $400 million from the state, $671 million for the city to tackle various issues, a portion of which, is likely to go towards digital divide issues and solving some of those. Private philanthropic efforts, the work, of folks like the Deutsch Foundation being added to now by so many others that are also focusing in on digital divide as a primary area of funding. So all of that to say, it's on us now. When there's another issue, another pandemic, or another problem, and we need to be, having this infrastructure in place. And this infrastructure is needed now, right? Like, it's not just that we need to wait till there's an emergency, but my point is we need to solve this, not just service it. We need to think about the structures that should be different, right? Internet has gone from being a private luxury good to being a utility, to, and whether it's regulated like a public utility is not for sort of me to say, but thinking about it as a utility that we need to be ensuring that people have connectivity, because the health, economic, educational implications are similar to not having running water, in this moment. And so how do we think about that, and how do we support to ensure that everybody, not just those that can afford it, but thinking about how do we help the 96,000 that currently don't have it, 96,000 households, it's a lot more individuals that currently don't have it. So, I'm excited and optimistic about the coalition and the work of folks, but I'm also sort of saying we gotta get the job done. Let's just do a really good job on this so that we're not sitting here a decade from now looking back at what went wrong, how we got in our own way, how we tripped over our own feet, how we just didn't solve it. I'd like to put ourselves out of a job as it relates to this, because there's other problems to solve and we should be working on those too, but this is in front of us now, and let's solve it, you know?
Yeah. And I want to thank you again for taking the time to talk with me, Andrew. And again, I always appreciate you giving me your insight and doing this with me.
Yeah, no, thank you. And, thanks for the work that you do. I know you've talked to so many different folks in the community, and just appreciate the ongoing conversations here, virtually, and looking forward to when we can be more in person back at a variety of events. So thank you.
Thank you. And that's been Technically Baltimore is the Look Ahead. And until next time, stay connected. We'll be right back.